Halifax approved short-term rental regulations that are set to begin in September. So short-term rental regulations like Airbnbs. Today, we're joined by Councillor Sean Cleary. How are you today, Sean?
I'm doing pretty awesome on a day like today. I'm looking at my window at nice white snow.
I wanted to hear your perspective. First of all, are you in favor of the proposed regulations? And can you explain to our audiences what the proposed regulations are?
So I'm in favor of regulating short-term rentals. The package that staff drafted up and presented to council have some shortcomings both in data and in the way they're going to regulate, which will have some negative impacts, including on students. And so the way staff have done it, they've done it by zone. So basically, if you have a commercial zone or a mixed use zone, so if you think about their urban core, our zoning for commercial uses would be things like the center zones and the corridor zones. So, you know, this would largely be places like Roby Street, Quinpool Road, Gottage and Agricola, Young, Shabukto, a number of sort of, you know, transit-oriented transit corridors. And in order for you to have a legal short-term rental, you would either have to reside in the unit. So if it's your apartment, your house, your flat, you have to reside in it, and you would only be able to rent out bedrooms in it while you are there, kind of like a bed and breakfast, if you live in a residential area. If you live in commercial or mixed use areas, then you would be able to rent out the whole unit, or what they call a whole home. So you could rent out your condo, your apartment, your house, or your flat, even if you don't live in that particular unit, you could rent it out. So this is, you know, to a certain extent, going to allow a lot of the rural areas to continue to rent out short-term rentals because they're largely more touristy. If you're going down, you know, St. Margaret's Bay, Musconaupit Harbor, those areas. And so the thinking was, if we want to encourage tourism, we want to keep that kind of short-term rental available, that's an appropriate place for it. But in the more urban core, where we want people living full time, then we'll try to reduce the numbers there, keep it in the commercial mixed uses, but not in the residential areas. So that's kind of the way it's playing out, which is a different way. Most jurisdictions don't regulate Airbnbs in the world that way. They regulate it mostly on the number of days you can rent out an Airbnb. And most typically 180 days. So you think of, you know, a lot of cities across Canada, Paris, you know, other jurisdictions that have regulated this, they do it on the number of days.
New regulations, they don't limit the number of nights or rooms that can be rented out.
No.
Okay. Can you?
Well, yes and no. So the number of rooms, yes. So you are limited in a residential area to 3 rooms in your primary residence.
You mentioned this might have some negative impacts on students. Can you elaborate?
So many students that I know of, and certainly when I was a student in my multiple degrees, I only wanted to rent from September to April or May because that's when school was on. And so having an 8-month lease is not attractive for a lot of landlords. So they prefer a 12-month lease. But with Airbnbs, I know a number of small and medium-sized landlords have contacted me who have students for 8 months of the year, allow the students to just sign that fixed-term lease for the 8 months, and then they Airbnb the unit for 4 months while the students aren't living there. But in a residential zone, that will no longer be allowed. So many of those landlords now will either force their tenants, if they're students, to sign a 12-month lease. So the student will have to pay for the unit for the summer, even if they're not living here, which I know some students do now. If their clientele don't want to sign 12-month leases, then they'll probably just not rent to students at all and rent to someone else, a professional, a family for the 12-month lease. So we could, you know, we're in a situation now where we don't have enough student rentals. We could actually see some small reduction in the number of student rentals we have now.
What do you expect the outcome of this decision will be? How is this new regulation going to help Haligonians in the long term?
I'm not sure it will much. And the reason I say that is the method that our staff proposed for regulating is based on zoning, means that If you are, say, a small homeowner and you rent out, you know, your basement apartment or your backyard suite, and you live in a residential area, you won't be able to do that anymore. And so people who might be just hanging on and just paying their mortgage. In fact, I was just before I talked to you, I was talking to a gentleman who's a fairly recent immigrant to Canada. He's got kids in university. He bought a condo downtown and was renting it out as an Airbnb. And he paid a premium for it because not all condo buildings allow in the regulations for Airbnb in the condominium building. And so he's in a position now where it's going to be illegal. He's going to have to sell it and it'll be at a loss. And he was using that income to help pay for his kids in university. And so, you know, there will be a number of, you know, small landlords, homeowners, you know, recent immigrants who are going to be very disadvantaged financially from this. And if you look at the way staff have done it, if I'm a larger landlord, you know, I own dozens and dozens or maybe hundreds of units. And I own some that are in residential areas and I want to continue Airbnb-ing those, I'll simply sell those homes in the residential area and buy one on Roby Street or Gottingen or Quinpool or an area where it's allowed in a mixed use or commercial zone. And so there'll be no net increase in long-term rentals because you're basically just displacing, you're selling one and buying another. So it's a net zero. Of the 2,000 listings that were there at the end of the summer last year, and they ebb and flow. So we're, you know, I think there was about 900 listings in January. It peaked at about 2,000 listings in August. Because again, many of these are seasonal. So if you say, well, even if it's 2,000 units that you could maybe convert to long-term rentals. So most of those will likely continue to be legal. So you won't get those converting to long term. Of the ones that are left, the neighborhood group that started this whole anti short term rental in residential areas phenomenon here in Halifax, I think it's called Neighbors Speak Up. Bill, who heads that kind of group, had estimated that, you know, maybe 400 units would convert based on the data that we have to long term rental. And I'm not sure that's entirely true. It might be some number less than that, but let's say it's 400. Halifax, given our vacancy rate of around 1% or just under 1% in most areas, we need 7,500 new units every single year for the next 5 years in order to make a dent in the housing crisis that we have right now. So a one-time injection of a few hundred units relative, you know, 7,500 units over 5 years is 37,500 units. So you're talking about a tiny, tiny fraction of the units that we actually need in Halifax converting. And that's only one time. It's not like you can do this every year and add 400 units from short-term rentals. The way the laws are written, it's just that one-time injection, if it happens. And so, you know, it's not going to affect rents. It's not going to affect the vacancy rate. It's not going to affect house prices. So, you know, unfortunately, the long-term impact is not going to be the positive one I think a lot of people were hoping for.
In your opinion, what are some long-term solutions that you would like to see the province implement?
So they've already started implementing a number just specific to the housing crisis. So a big issue in Halifax is capacity to build units. So we are getting, I mean, last year we had over 20,000 people move to Halifax. The year before that was about 10,000. The year before that was about 9,000. And so, you know, we're getting consistently large numbers of people moving here. When I first became a counselor, population of Halifax was just over 400,000. Now it's 480,000. That's only in 6.5 years. Typically, we would be building about 2,500 units per year. I think last year we built about 3,500 units, give or take. And again, as I mentioned, we need about 7,500 to bring the vacancy rate up to a more normal level. And so we just simply don't have enough developers, enough contractors, enough laborers to do all of that work. So, you know, training more tradespeople, the provincial government has been increasing support for the community college and trades programs. We need more carpenters. We need more plumbers. We need more pipe fitters. We need more construction workers who do concrete and form work and all that kind of stuff. So that's going to be important, but that's there's a lag to that. You can't just train a bunch of people in a month and say, okay, now we've got all these workers. That's going to take several years. Also, then you have to look at the type of the demographics and the type of people who are moving here, what kind of supports they need, where they want to live. And the majority of people now want to live in the urban core. And so, you know, that's why we see the development rules that we pass to allow much more density in the urban core, is because most people want to live here. I think 50% of our development is now happening in the urban core. And so we need to make sure that we have the appropriate workers to build those kind of things, the entrepreneurs who want to do those sorts of things, and that we're not doing it in such a way that it's just increasing the cost, because we already see, just think about demand and supply. We have too much demand and not enough supply, and the house prices now, you'd be hard pressed to find a house on the peninsula for less than $700,000 or $800,000. And so we're pricing people out of a middle-class lifestyle. And so people are either moving further away or they're putting more resources into this. So ironically, one of the things people were doing was they would buy a $700,000 or $800,000 house. They would, you know, put an Airbnb unit in it so that they could afford the mortgage. And we've just taken that away from a lot of people.